General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
A few days ago, I was rereading some of the letters sent to me during the 2.5 years we've been together in these programs. Many of you write to tell me of personal experiences, stories which could perhaps be told to a wider audience. A number of letters say, please, not so many tales about Kenya, or, please, more stories about Kenya. Some people have a fascination for the Africa of yesterday, finding nothing much worth bothering with in this continent since the 30s. Others enjoy most of all modern adventures, when they can identify themselves with the characters. My old father used to say, you can please some of the people all of the time, and all of the people some of the time, and them are pretty good odds. With this advice in mind, I endeavoured to decide which kind of story pleased most listeners. After a lot of deliberation, I've come to the conclusion that it's the tale with an air of mystery about it, the yarn that leaves the listener in mid-air, wondering. I might be wrong, but I hope I'm not. With this in mind, I offer you tonight Old Man on the Rock. Corundum in the northern Transvaal once proved quite a profitable occupation for men who were fond of the open-air life and prepared to rough it. While the boom lasted, men made money. Some of them made a lot. They dug big holes everywhere, sifted the six-sided heavy crystals, and carted them to the siding in their wagons or carts. Most of them camped on their claims, under pretty primitive conditions usually, living in tents or even under their wagons. Now, Wumpit LaRue worked harder than most. He made more money than most as well, and saved it too. He bought a piece of ground and worked it in a business-like way.
Younger! Younger! Wat maakt Grant met hierdie klippe? Wil ek graag weet.
He sends it to Europe, Wumpit. It's harder than all other minerals, except diamonds. It's used as an abrasive. Then they tell me it polishes up into beautiful stones, semi-precious stones. Anyway, Wumpit, long as you get good money for it, why should you worry, huh? Money for jam, Wumpit. Money for jam.
Yeah. Money for jam, eh?
Come and have a couple of selfies with me tonight, and stay to dinner too if you like. I shot a dagger yesterday, so there'll be decent scoff tonight.
Yeah, younger, I'll be there. I'll come along and help you drink your dope.
Don't you spit that tobacco juice too near my oxen, Pete. One day the track oxen will lick some of it off the achterbeest, so they will frack.
Yeah, I know. It kills snakes too, my friend.
The old miner hobbled off, leaving Jan Jonker and the stranger, who said his name was Sarel Meyer, sitting on Jonker's wagon.
You must have a lot of cash then, the old man there. I saw him collect over £30 from Grant this morning. For just one load, too. You say he delivers the stuff 2 or 3 times a week? That amounts to...
So what? Don't you get any ideas about that, old man? We're a decent lot here. We don't steal from each other.
Who said stealing? I'm honest as the day's long. Curiosity, that's all. Wondering how much the old man's made. Wondering if I ought to give it a go, too. I think I will, Jonker. I think I will, if you'll lend me some tools and let me sleep in your camp tonight. I'll buy a bit of land. I want to go to the Groot Spelonken as soon as I can. But I'll give this Corundum a bang first, I reckon.
Well, you can stay with me. We'll maybe shoot some guinea fowl on the way back. Make a detour instead of coming across direct across the camp. They like to feed out on the road just after sunset. You better have that smart greener double barrel 34 ready when we get round the big bend. That's where they all like to feed.
They got their guinea fowl, and it was long after dark when they completed the detour and arrived at Yonkers camp. The old man, Wump Pitt, was already there.
Thought you'd broken down, young. My team's been outspanned a long time ago.
We spotted guinea fowl, Wump Pitt. My friend here shot 7. Took a little time to collect the wounded birds. This is Sarl Mayer, a new man on the cop.
Sarl?
Sarl wants to work, Wump Pitt. Will you sell him a claim and some tools?
Yeah. Tomorrow, I'll fix him up. Now, what about those soupies, eh?
I'll get it all arranged. Something to eat for dinner, too.
You know, Grant's cut the money for Corundum by half, don't you?
What? I didn't know that.
It's true.
Well, that's that, then. I shall have to pack up and get out. Let's drink to bad news. I'll fetch the peach brandy.
I was hoping to make enough here to buy a wagon and trek up to the Grootsbelonken. Uncle of mine had a small gold mine there once. He's dead now. Killed by natives, they said.
That's a nice gun you've got there.
Nice old blunderbuss, eh?
Blunderbuss. No blunderbuss. Greener 34. Double barrel, double choke. In wonderful condition. I know a good shotgun or rifle when I see one. Only seen one more like that. Belonged to a man I knew once. In...
Mm-hmm.
Only seen one more greener 34 like that.
Suddenly there was a strange sort of atmosphere around the fire. Wump Pitt was staring at the rifle, the greener 34. Sarl Mayer was rubbing the side of his leg thoughtfully, his brow creased, worry lines cutting the space between the eye and the ear on either side of his face. And then Mayer looked up.
Maybe I'll have to make do without a wagon and trek to the Grootsbelonken on foot.
Here's your dop, Wump Pitt. Sarl.
Thanks, Jonker.
Grootsbelonken, huh? I might come with you. I think there's no good now with Grant cutting down the money.
Would you come? I've got a couple of hundred you could have for a share in your wagon.
I think I might be interested in going up there.
I was just trying to remember the name of the man who had a rifle. Just like that one there. That greener. Old friend of mine. Died, though. A while ago. Accident.
When did you think you might want to start, Sarl?
Maybe I'll come too, eh? I know the Grootsbelonken. For the fee, I'd show you.
I think for this sort of journey, two men is best, Wump Pitt.
The old man's eyes flickered towards the rifle again, and then he rose as if he'd come to some decision.
What's the matter, Leroux? Wump Pitt, what is it? Drink, man, and tell us about the mountains of the Grootsbelonken. I've never been there. There's a lot to talk about, too.
Talk. Too much talk. Always too much talk. You don't want me with you, Mayor. All right.
Well, it's just that,
I've remembered my friend's name. When I had a rifle like yours. His name was Paul Fleming.
Now Sarl Mayer began to sweat. Strange, because the night air was quite chilly.
That seems.
And Wump Pitt Leroux walked away. Jan Jonker glanced at his new partner. The man's face was twisted. There was murder in the eyes. The leaping flames of the campfire made it worse, although Mayer's face was still, frozen. The dancing shadows appeared to contort it. Jonker looked hurriedly away. Several yards from the fire, the greener 34 shone, polished, strangely malevolent, although at rest and unloaded. When Jonker glanced half fearfully back at Mayer, that man was smiling happily.
I think perhaps we'll go soon, eh? Trek tomorrow to the Grootsbelonken.
Jonker and Mayer packed up and got ready to trek early the next day. Around 8 o'clock they were ready to quit, but Jonker had business to attend to. There was the settling of his claim to arrange and the selling of his equipment. It was doubtful whether he'd find anyone to buy the claim, now that Grant had cut the money offered for Corundum by half, but he was determined to do what he could. Sarl Mayer sat and smoked a pipe. The sun was hot. Natives were looking for work. Dogs were barking. The camp was busy. The men who decided to stay despite the drop in price were leaving for their diggings. Some, like Jonker, had decided to quit altogether. These were packing up, getting their wagons ship-shape. for the trek to Lydenburg diggings, where there was gold to be found, so men said, or back to Johannesburg or Pretoria. Mayo was sitting smoking then, and Wumpit Leroux walked up to him.
You're going then, eh? Going to the Grootsblonken, eh? You want to watch out. Watch out for the mountains. Steep, winding roads up there, too. Mist on the hills. They tell me there's a spook up there, too. You look just like him, boy. Just like Paul. Just like Paul, your uncle.
Wumpit smiled a little crookedly.
I loved your uncle, boy. Paul Fleming. They tell me he met with a bad accident up there. Up near the mine he discovered.
I don't know any Paul Fleming, old man. He was certainly not my uncle. You're confusing me with another man. Somewhere, some...
No, boy. Not confusing you. It does not matter. Just sad memories. You were lucky to get a gun like you've got, though. From your uncle.
Listen! That gun was my uncle's. He lost his life. Not in the Grootsblonken, though. He was killed by some native somewhere, I don't know where. They took the Greener 34 to his wife, my aunt, and she gave it to me. My uncle wasn't Paul Fleming. My uncle's name was Becker. Becker, that was his name. Franz Becker.
Leroux smiled, bowed slightly, and said,
watch out for the Grootsblonken, boy. It's not a good place. Spooks, they reckon.
And the old man turned and walked away, and Mayo didn't see him any more because they left that day at noon. Many miles. There were many miles to travel. Because theirs was not a rich outfit, Jonker only took with him Marama, his cook, and Habaneri. Habaneri was a pickaninny, like thousands of other pickaninnies, bright-eyed youngsters who wandered all over the northern Transvaal in those days, leading the long-horned cattle day after day as wagons were hauled over dirt roads, on farms, through small dorps, and over mountain tracks in the Spelunken. Habaneri was the same as the others, except that he was dumb. He played all day long on a battered mouth organ, tunes no one else had ever heard before. Through the Bandelierkop into the Grootsblonken. Marama cared for the oxen that were led by the pickaninny who couldn't speak. He did most of the other chores too, and the white men frequently had to cook their own food. Habaneri cooked for Marama. Into the Spelunky. Perhaps their 20th camp of the trek, for they'd been away 6 weeks and had stopped for 3 or 4 days in some places. And Jonker, who trekked as much for company as anything else, cursed himself for getting landed with a morose travelling companion. And Sarel Meyer was morose. He spoke vaguely of a mine worked by his uncle who had died. A mine which held, still, riches. But when Jonker asked him where the mine was, whether he thought they were getting nearer or not, Meyer became evasive. The cattle were lying down, tied to the trek gear. The dogs had found a dry corner underneath the wagon, a little apart from the men. Young and Sarel Meyer sat with their backs against a wagon wheel, under a tarpaulin which had been secured to the branch of a thorn tree.
Stop that noise, you! Habaneri! You're deaf as well!
Meyer! He's doing nothing wrong. The pickaninny's doing no harm. He gets little enough enjoyment as it is in life without you screaming down his throat.
As far as I'm concerned, he is doing harm. He's ruining my nerves with his playing.
What's the matter, Marama?
Oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, more rims. These drums on the brakes of the wagon. How is bad. Too bad.
That moment the old man looked over towards the rain-soaked copy in front of the camp.
What? How? What's the matter?
No, look.
What's going on with you?
Shut up.
What? That man there in the rain. What's spitting in
what
the rain? Out there, man.
Where is he?
And then the white man saw what frightened the old native. And as they saw a man, an old man, a white man, sitting upon the largest of a group of moonlighted boulders, 40 yards from the camp, the rain increased.
Where's he sprung from, huh? I mean, sitting out there. Where's his wagon? He must come in here and... He's gone? Where's he gone? Did you see where he went to bed? Did you see him? Cyril, did you see him?
See what, Gunn? I never saw anything out there. Let's get some sleep, shall we?
You jumped up when Marama was frightened. You saw him. He was sitting up there, up on that rock.
I jumped up. Yes, I jumped up. Anybody would have jumped up, Jan. Marama shouted loud enough to wake the dead. But I never saw what you saw. He is superstitious. He's even got you to think you're seeing things now.
I'm not seeing things. There was a man up there last night in all the rain.
Let me go, please, Jan. I think we ought to get back. There's nothing for us in the Grootsbelonken.
There's a mine. A mine your uncle worked. That's what we're looking for. We're staying.
When Jonker said this, Meyer's calm vanished for a split second. A shadow passed across his face, a shadow of fear. Jonker saw this shadow, and although it puzzled him, he was relieved, too, for he knew instinctively that the other man had seen the figure upon the rock.
More rain to come, man. I'm tired of rain.
I'm going to go back, Jan.
Then go back. You'll walk, though. I'm staying here with my wagon.
Oh, all right. You win. All right.
Today, we look for the mine. Concentrate, Sarl. You told me there was a mine to be found.
He was unsure of Sarl Meyer now. He had a word with Marama, his personal servant, for many years. He explained that the other boss was liable to go off his head and that Marama should not sleep heavily at night, but instead share watches with young Jonker. Marama agreed, but Marama himself was afraid because he knew with resignation married to deep fear that that night they were to have a visitor. Jonker opened his eyes during his first sleep while Marama was watching. He looked towards the rocks, rubbed his eyes and looked again. Of course the figure was there, just sitting. The moonlight was bright, although rain fell steadily. The man was there. He was a white man, no doubt of that, a white man, old, hatless.
Sarl, Marama, bring the lamp! Come on, fast!
Marama sat bolt upright, looked towards the figure upon the rock, closed his eyes, rocked himself miserably and prayed to all his ancient gods to protect him. Meyer awoke, and he too looked towards the rock. What he saw turned him pale. He reached for the rifle, the Greener 34, and shot. And shot.
Meyer, watch fire!
Here. Get under the top wall and you're wet.
Why did you shoot at it?
At what?
The man on the rock.
You're mad.
Don't call me mad.
We'd better go back. The Grootsbelonken's turning your brain.
I'm not returning, Meyer. I'm staying. And you're staying with me. I'll tell you why. One, I do not believe in ghosts. I went out there, and that old man had gone. He'd gone, although there was nowhere for him to go to. But I don't believe in ghosts, so I want to stay and find out what he is, who he is. Two, I think the mine's close. I know it's close.
There's no mine. It was all lies.
Oh, no, my friend. I'm sorry. That doesn't work. Not now.
Suit yourself.
And last of all, I know that you see this man each night, and I know that you are afraid. Why?
For two more days they camped in the same place, near the great rocks. Both nights the lonely figure came and sat upon the largest rock. Meyer could not hide his fear now, although he still denied seeing anything. The first night Jonker stationed himself at the rock and waited for an hour. It did not rain. The figure did not appear until nearly midnight, by which time he'd been back at the fire for almost 20 minutes. He ran with the torch to investigate. Nothing. The second night he just sat by the fire and stared at the old man upon the rock. He seemed to be waiting for something. This time Jan Jonker saw him go. He stood up and slithered down the grey rocks and vanished. For a fleeting moment, Jonker fancied that there was something familiar in the haunched shoulders of the spook. The next night was darker than any Jan Jonker could ever remember. There was no moon, no visitor. Then came another night, bright moonlight. The air was heavy with the threat of rain. Jonker slept on his watch. Marama slept, the Pickaninn slept. It was like a place of the dead, except for one lonely figure.
What are you? What's that? What's happening? Digging.
Sarl Mayer. Move closer, Sarl, if you want the gold.
What's this?
Sarl. Gold, Sarl. Gold, Sarl. Here.
Mayer ran and stumbled towards the figure on the rock, the figure in the moonlight upon the rock. One moment he saw it, the next there was nothing, for the moon had dived into a sea of black rain cloud. Mayer reached the rock. The moon came out again. And there on the northern side of the big rock was a hole torn from the earth. Looking into this hole, Sarl Mayer saw lumps of quartz with a bright yellow streak in each.
Look!
He stood directly below the great rock now, the rock upon which the figure had sat upon so many nights.
You see all that? That's gold all in there.
And those were the last words he ever spoke.
You were going? Wonder we never met up, eh?
I struck it pretty rich, Umpit. But I had a bit of bad luck, too.
Yes?
Sarl got killed out there. Rock fall. Right on the side of the reef, too. I've got to explain it all to the police in case they... I'll tell you all about it, too.
I struck it rich as well. I've already staked my claim. Oh, it's a spooky place, I can tell you. Right near some great rocks, standing up like fingers. Good reef it is, too. Been mine before, I think. Where's this reef you found, eh?
Jonker stared at the old man with utter disbelief. He opened his mouth and then closed it again.
Come and share my dop, Jan Jonker. We'll have a long talk. I've got something to offer you.
In 1929, I met an elderly man in a bar in Windhoek. He was holidaying in Southwest Africa. An Afrikaner by birth, he'd travelled the world over. In his youth, he'd struck it rich in the Groot Spelonken. His name was Jan Jonker. He told me the story I've told you tonight. I warned you, there is no explanation for so many things. Why did Mayer travel to the Groot Spelonken? Was it in search of an old mine and a gold-bearing reef? If so, why did he wish for a partner? And once at the site, why didn't he simply go ahead? Who or what was the figure that sat upon the rock? Where did it go to? What was the significance of the rifle, which appeared to mean a great deal, to be sure, to both Mayer and Umpit? Was Paul Fleming really Sarl Mayer's uncle? Where the man who was killed by the rock acted for himself, we can only guess what he did and what he heard. I only assume something in his mind, some past guilt, called him to the open reef that night. And then, how did the rock fall upon him and crush him? One thing, though, one thing Jonker remembers vividly. The lonely old figure in the rain did look like Umpit Leroux. Motive for murder? How did the uncle die if he was Sarul's uncle? You see? We shall never know the truth. Wumpit left his share of the reef they had both discovered to Young on his death, first making sure during his life that the younger man was well set up. Conscience troubles? That was Yonker's story. You must decide for yourself.